Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of September 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural cash grain markets with Amy Sage. She's at the Andersons right here in Champaign County, and we'll take a look at the difference between the western and the eastern corn belt, especially as it relates to soybean basis. And then as we round out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Oh, and Scott Irwin will be here to talk about that controversial pinning that he did for the FarmDoc Daily website as it relates to ethanol and the small refinery exemptions. Some of his data says, hey, wait a second, it didn't have an impact on the use of ethanol. However, that's also related to the very low price of corn. We'll do all that right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. December corn for the day at 3 3/4 lower, finished at $3.48. The March at 3.60 down 3 3/4. May down 4 at 3.68 1/4. July at 3.74 3/4, 3.5 lower. And next year's December down 2 3/4. It finished at $3.87 1/4. From the soy complex, nearby beans down 7 cents at 8.20. 3.5 January 8.37 1/4 down 7. March 8.50 1/2 6 3/4 lower. In the May down 6.5 at 8.63 3/4. July 8.74 down 6 1/4. Next year's November beans at 8.89 down 2 3/4 for the day. Bean oil futures 6 cents lower at 27.43. The bean meal at 302.90 down 2.90. Wheat futures for the soft red at 5.06 1/4. In the lead December down 5 1/4. July at 5.45 1/2 4 3/4 lower. Hard red winter wheat finished July at 5.48 3/4 down 3 3/4 cents. October live cattle 37.5 lowered 113.42 1/2. December at 118.10 down, or rather up a nickel for the day. September feeders down a dime at 157.32 1/2. However, October at 159.17 1/2. Up 30 in the lean hogs in the October, up 22.5 at $56.45. December at 55.37 1/2, down $1.27 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, online at willag.org. Here, what some of the other markets are trading like at this hour. October crude oil for the day at $68.81 a barrel, down 18 cents. Ethanol futures 6 tenths lower at $1.27 1/2 a gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.20 and 4 tenths of a cent. That's down 4 tenths. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.97 1/2, just about a half cent higher. Natural gas at $2.81 7/10. Up 5 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 36 points higher at 26,122. The S&P up, or rather down 10.5 at 28,95.75. The dollar at 94.49 is down 0.435. And gold futures for the day at $1,210.20. They're currently up $5 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area for this evening as it comes from the National Weather Service. Mostly clear skies, a low of 67. Winds out of the west at 3 to 5. Tomorrow, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1. Mostly sunny, a high of 89. Partly cloudy, a low of 68 on Tuesday evening. Light and variable winds. Mostly sunny on Wednesday, a high of 90. Southwest winds at 3 to 8. And partly cloudy with a low of 70 on Wednesday night on a south wind at about 7 miles an hour. Thursday, sunny skies in 92. South-southwest winds at 8 to 15, gusting to 23. And Thursday evening, partly cloudy, a low of 71. On Friday, a chance of showers, partly sunny, 85 degrees. Friday night, more showers after 1 a.m., cloudy and 59. And Saturday, more showers, mostly cloudy and 76. Always just a chance of showers, even on Saturday evening, cloudy and a low of 58 degrees. Sunday, to start the next week, mostly sunny skies and a high near 76 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mark Russo. He is at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Kurt Kimmel is now here. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so first things first, the president over the weekend threatened again another $200 billion worth of tariffs on the Chinese goods. These are already lined up, and he's meaning that he wants to put them in place. That was supposed to maybe come today, as early as tomorrow. The trade looked like it took that pretty well. What do we know about the conditions at this point, and do we think it will have an impact if put in place on the commodity markets, or is it just on the broader market, and how worried might we be about that?
Well, last week we talked or heard talks about the two sides getting together and going through the negotiation process. Then as we went into the weekend, this was talked about. $200 billion, instead of the 25%, it'd be more like 10%. But the thing is, the Chinese were supposedly going to counter with $60 billion. So I think we're starting to get to the point that we're going to be hitting them with a lot more than they can hit with us, unless they kind of up the percentage on that. But the market took it fairly well as a whole. I mean, we saw some gyrations there Friday and again here on Monday, but it's getting to be old news. The thing about the soybeans, though, when you look at Brazilian beans, they're about $2.20 over the board, whereas the Gulf is about, one time it was 10 under, so we're getting wide enough where we've got the cheapest beans in the world, and I think the trades kind of continue to see that we're seeing non-traditional buyers come forward to buy beans at a discount compared to what little's left over in other countries. So it can still be a concern longer term, but I think we're kind of at a standstill in through here and kind of wait to see what other news comes forward here as far as production and so forth as we move through this week.
How nervous should the trade be about, and you mentioned the Gulf bids, about the Chinese not actually coming in this fall and buying soybeans?
Well, it's a concern, you know, especially if you have beans to sell, not only Gulf, but the Pacific Northwest also. But, you know, there's ideas they'll need some or up to 10 million metric tons as they move into this January, February, March time window to satisfy some need before the South American crop comes back online. But if we have some production issues in the Southern Hemisphere, there'll be quick buyers in through here because they'll want to secure some inventory because they're going to need some protein. They've tried doing some substitutions and so forth. We'll see how that news unfolds. Now, I'm not justifying storing beans to hang on to see what happens in through here. That could be a problem here as we move through this winter and we don't see the non-traditionals pick up the slack or see China completely go somewhere else.
And so farmers are actually faced with, on the eastern side of the Illinois River, something like 60 under. On the western side, depending on how far to the west you go, 85 to $1.85 under. Is there anything they can do to help mitigate the wide basis that they're seeing as they go to harvest for these soybeans?
Yeah, there's a good old-fashioned tool that's been around for quite some time. Is called a hedge, and to capture the carry. Now, the hedge is not just putting it in the bin or the elevator and just seeing and hoping and praying. That's not it. The Chicago Board of Trade originally was set up because we had huge, huge supplies in the fall and very little supplies or good quality supplies in the summer. So they developed an exchange to level out this marketing place where you could see buyers and sellers get together and hedge both ways and kind of flatten out the market somewhat. But this extreme gyration offers the opportunity to do a good old-fashioned hedge. And basically, if you look at the July futures out there at 875 versus your local cash bid, what you do is you come in and sell those and capture the carry. And you can defend that hedge if you want, to, you know, in case you think it go a little higher, but sort of sit tight and wait for the basis to narrow up. Now, the commercials have been waiting for the basis to narrow up for the last 2 years, and it's been a challenge for them. But if you've got some storage, and want to try to capture something through here, I think you kind of take a look at that scenario. And there's a lot of good people in your program, Todd, that can help anyone out there through that process to kind of manage some risk there.
I know you've probably been onto the phone talking to producers and others across the Midwest. What are you hearing in the way of both corn and soybean yields?
Oh, quite variable. There's some pockets in through here where corn was 250 bushel last year. It's 200 this year. Moisture's still in the 17% to 23% area. Beans on the low side, 60 in some pockets, and real small beans, but you know there's a lot of them. On the upper end, man, there's some guys talking 280, 290 bushel corn, and upwards of 90, 95 bushel beans. Now there's some a little higher than that, but you know we're still early here, so. The crop is there, you know, how large it is, we're going to debate that clear into next year. So barring no weather disaster, and we do have a huge moisture producer coming at us as we head into this coming weekend through here. But thus far, you know, it's going to be a challenge to find a home for this crop or find some storage for here if you're in an area that's fairly tight on that.
Still just a 1.78 billion bushels, and I say that knowing it could be 2, 2.1, 2.3, 2.4. At least there should be some light at the end of the tunnel for corn, unless a whole lot of acreage switches next year, and then you know marketing earlier rather than later might be the thing to do, I would suppose. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the thing to keep an eye on. You know, if these beans, you know, continue to rot away and through here, there's guys already talking some additional corn acres next year. It's amazing. Fertilizer prices are have taken a bounce in through here, so we'll see what the input costs are. But when you look at DEIS-19 corn, back above 4 into this 420 area, I think is a hedging opportunity to get us into the spring to see how many actual acres. Because if you would add acres to the equation here, and we have another good year next year, we'll probably be back above 2 billion bushels. So you got to kind of look forward in through here. As most guys will say, I still have some 17 I'm carrying into 18, and I still have some whole crop I need to do something with. But yeah, you need to look forward here, and there could be some opportunities out there in that 2019 crop.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. U of I agricultural economist Scott Irwin has been studying the ethanol industry for a very long time and specializes in the legislation and policies that surround how it has come to fruition in the United States. He now joins us to take up the SREs, or the small refinery exemptions, that corn producers across the United States have been arguing EPA instituted illegally, and are very upset about how much they believe this has impacted the size of the market for ethanol. Thanks so much for being with us, Scott. First, you've said that this is a controversial penning of an article, and people can read it on the FarmDoc Daily website. Why is that the case?
First off, the broader context is the political controversy surrounding the RFS that we've been living through really for at least 6 years. And so that's been ongoing. And the latest front in that RFS controversy has been the issue of small refinery exemptions. And that's why it's controversial.
So it seems that the exemptions from producing and using these gallons of ethanol, these exemptions should show up in the consumption numbers. But the data you've come up with doesn't exactly show that.
Right. And so there is definitely a counterintuitive element to what's going on, because that logic seemingly makes sense. We have a mandate. You cut the mandates in basically a backdoor manner through these small refinery exemptions, reducing the base volume for computing the percentage standards. It makes sense. You would expect usage to be falling. But in fact, it's a little trickier than that. And I find it really helpful to think about it. The ethanol market is having two parts. One for E10, 10% blends, which is the vast bulk of the gasoline used in the United States. And then another part for E15 and E85, higher ethanol blends. And if we focus first just on the big part, which is E10, it turns out that there's a very simple thing going on right now in recent months. Ethanol is really cheap relative to gasoline. It's priced somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of the price of gasoline. And therefore, it makes economic sense to include it in the E10 gasoline blend, regardless of what the mandate level is. And that's what the data show has been going on.
So this use case scenario is part and parcel of the very low price of corn right now. What would be the difference if there was a very high price?
And that would be a different scenario. And I point that out in the article, that we are in a situation where, due to the small refinery exemptions, you could see some knock on ethanol demand if corn prices rose substantially. But they would probably have to rise maybe close to $5 a bushel, to $5 a bushel, before we would see at current gasoline prices any problems with ethanol demand in the form of E10.
What does it say about the actions of EPA, if anything?
Well, it's important to understand what my analysis says and doesn't say. What it says is that if there has been ethanol demand destruction, it's been in the form of demand for the higher blends, E15 and E85. I really don't think there's any evidence that you can see it in the demand for E10, and the reasons make sense. There's probably been some demand destruction for those higher blends, but they're so small in the aggregate statistics to begin with, it's hard to really detect it in the data. But it probably has to be going on. But the really important message is that for those that are concerned about demand destruction from these SREs, I think the concerns are directed at the wrong target. Where we should likely see the demand destruction going on is for biodiesel rather than ethanol.
Why is that the case?
Well, the contrast is fairly straightforward. Like we just said, the ethanol in the form of an E10 gasoline blend is very price competitive. And so what happens with the mandate levels doesn't affect it, at least at the present time. Biodiesel, by comparison, is still expensive relative to petroleum diesel. So if there's an opportunity to reduce usage, you're going to see that happen in the marketplace. And so I haven't gone through the formal analysis and have to do the proper calculations, but I expect to find some significant demand destruction in biodiesel.
Would this be demand destruction in that gap where biodiesel fills in between the blend wall and the mandate, or where would it be?
Well, it's a little complicated because biodiesel fills three different buckets in the RFS. There's the biodiesel mandate itself. That's one bucket. A second bucket is the advanced mandate above the biodiesel mandate, and biodiesel has filled most of that. And then the one you mentioned, Todd, which is the bucket, which is the gap between the conventional ethanol mandate and the amount that we can of ethanol that we can consume. And my estimate is that in 2018, without any of the small refinery exemptions, we would have needed to use about 3 billion gallons of biomass-based diesel. And if the SREs are going to cut the base by 10%, well, we would need to use 2.7 billion gallons instead of 300 million gallons, which certainly is a material decline.
One final question. If E15 were to be successfully pushed for year-round usage, What difference does this make?
Well, that's another very controversial point. My analysis says not much. It certainly has to help in terms of pushing E15 forward. If you can't offer it year-round, who's going to invest in the infrastructure to push it? So clearly, it would be going in the right direction. But the problem for E15 is, based on at least my analysis and others, is that it takes at present gasoline and ethanol prices, a RIN price of probably at least 40 or 50 cents to make the economics work. And D6 ethanol RIN prices are only about half that right now. And so even with an RVP waiver, I don't see E15 expanding a lot.
Hey, thank you so much.
Always my pleasure.
That's Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. You can read more from his FarmDoc Daily article online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's entitled Small Refinery Exemptions and Ethanol Demand Destruction. It was released on the 13th day of September. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Amy Sage is with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Amy. Are you busy today?
We are a little busy today, Todd. We've picked up on receipts quite a bit, and obviously the weather's worked out pretty nicely, so we're seeing a lot of guys going today who hadn't already started.
And the producers doing both corn and soybeans?
Yes, actually, have had a few more switch over to beans today. I would expect that to pick up even more each day throughout the week here. Not as many were over the weekend, but today we're starting to see a few guys switch. Tomorrow we'll see more and so on. So.
I assume the concern is the dry down on both crops is happening really fast.
It is. It certainly is. I think a lot of people have been surprised at how dry both their corn and beans have been coming in. Obviously, we've had 80, 90 degree weather here, so it's really, really moved along quickly.
What are the discussions like about basis in the export market for you guys as it pertains to the Western and the Eastern Corn Belt?
Yep. So, obviously, this has not been an ideal year for either corn or beans as far as basis goes and rail markets specifically for us. Corn has remained a little bit stronger than what soybeans have. Still no improvement, though, and always a concern that we could see levels get a little bit worse as we continue to progress through harvest, especially with yield reports. And typically during gut slot harvest, you see them weaken. So that's standard. Soybeans have been a completely different animal this year as well. And again, hearing really good yield reports and more tensions with the trade war and additional tariffs is probably not going to help anything there. So just really kind of not too happy news from a basis front. And I think that that's represented across the entire Midwest. Thankfully, even though our levels around here seem terrible compared to normal, I think we're in one of the more fortunate parts of the country. I think everybody's heard out west we're seeing some numbers close to $2 under for soybeans, and so it's definitely widespread.
And your bids for the day?
313 for corn across the scale, 768 for soybeans, 481 for wheat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, Amy Sage from the Andersons, back in 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
It's National Apple Dumpling Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1677, Stephen Hales was born. An English botanist, he pioneered the quantitative experimental approach in plant and animal physiology. His work showed the importance of air and light in plant growth, and he investigated plant respiration. In 1869, John Elder died, a Scottish marine engineer. He co-developed the compound steam marine engine. His engine divided steam expansions into two cylinders so that each cycled through a smaller range of temperatures and pressures, which improved fuel efficiency. In 1872, the first U.S. patent for an automatic sprinkler system was issued to Philip Pratt. And in 1911, Cal Rogers took off from Long Island, New York on what would be the first U.S. coast-to-coast airplane flight. Along the way, he made 30 stops, including 19 crashes, before reaching Pasadena, California. During the 49 days of the flight, he logged 82 hours in the air. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and Busey. With nearly 150 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest and tell us how the harvest may go for producers bringing in both the corn and the soybean crop. Can you give me an idea?
Yeah, Todd. Well, certainly the past week and a half has been just highly favorable for early harvest due to the warmer and drier conditions. That is going to be changing as we go through the next couple of weeks, as we will see an increase in rain activity across the region. It is not an exceptionally wet pattern, but already we're starting to see some bands of showers and thunderstorms develop across the northwestern part of the Midwest, and then that will continue to expand east and south as we go through the remainder of this week and even on into next week as well. And so with the increase in rain activity, that will at least begin to cause some disruptions in overall harvest progress. However, again, we're not expecting any kind of major bog down or any kind of excessively wet pattern, but it is something to keep an eye on, especially as we get into October and more harvesting taking place. And ideally you'd like dry conditions, and with this uptick in rainfall at the end of the month and into the early part of October, it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, temperatures have been warm. Will we keep it that way for the rest of the week? And I ask mostly because it's drying the corn down along with some of the wind really, really fast.
Yeah, the unseasonably warm temperatures will prevail all week long. In fact, we'll see more record-setting temperatures over the next couple of days. Next week will feature a moderation in the heat, or fall heat here, as we go through next week, but no sign of any change to a much colder pattern or anything that would bring down unseasonably cold weather, which actually is some good pooling of cold air across areas of Canada, but there's no mechanism to drive that southward over the next several weeks.
What do you see in South America as they begin their growing season?
Well, Todd, we see very favorable weather across virtually all of South America as we begin to start the new growing season. Across Mato Grosso, where they're beginning to plant soybeans already, the onset of the rainy season has begun, and we are seeing daily thunderstorm development, and that will continue through the end of the month and into early October. And then down in southern Brazil and Argentina, frontal system rains will provide additional boosts in soil moisture reserves. So no sign of any problems, whether it's dryness or any feature that would block rainfall. And as a result of that, it's shaping up to be a good September and into early October across South America.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week to hear more about the weather forecast, especially as we make our way through the harvest season here in the Midwest. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Look us up. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great and a very safe afternoon. If you're traveling the byways of rural America, do watch out for those combines and trucks and tractors. They move slowly.